afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it's Friday, July 6th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Melody, hallelujah. It's Happy Friday.
Yes, it is. It's been an active week this week all over the place from with having a day off in the middle of the week. It just kind of messes up with your scheduling. And I love my routine. So whenever there's a holiday that messes up that routine, it's just like, I'd work 24/7 if I could. But I can't.
You're a leader by example.
Yeah, but I also want to let the listeners know that we might have and the producer, because I know Todd's listening, we're having thunderstorms all afternoon. The internet connections are weak, which means the technology that brings us all together for the radio program might be interrupted throughout this hour. So, but we'll just plug along as best we can. And I thank you for your patience. And I thank you for your patience with the gold and silver prices, because you need that patience once again today. Little pressure on gold today, down $280 at $1,255. Silver's down 3 cents today at $16.10. Had a little bit of a recovery in platinum and palladium. You have platinum up $2 at $847, with palladium down, I'm sorry, up to also at 955. The USDX today was weaker, down 0.34, 94.04. Crude oil was up 85 at 73.79. And of course, the markets reacted to the strong jobs report. You have the Dow up 94 points at 24,451. The NASDAQ was up 101, 1.3%, 7,688. The S&P was up 23, 2,759. Euro was 117, stronger by 0.44. 10-year yield, 2.83%. And that's, you know, it was a strange week. You know, big hits in the precious metals earlier in the week. They're still closing above the levels that I really want them to trade above. So really, hasn't been a bad week in gold, or it's not ending the week so bad for gold. So I think normal trading gets back, whatever that might be in today's world. We'll be back next week, and I think you'll see stronger prices for both gold and silver. We certainly have a lot to talk about, and you know, some of the main topics today, Dave, is most likely the tariff situation. And again, everybody knows, let me see, I lost my, see, I told you already the internet is messing me up a little bit, but we can say that the U.S. tariffs are on $34 billion worth of Chinese goods. That was kicked off today. And, of course, escalating a war of words between the world's two largest economies that into a full-blown trade conflict. Washington's 25% duties went into effect at midnight, and affected products such as water boilers, X-ray machine components, airplane tires, and various other industrial products. And of course, China, they immediately implemented retaliatory tariffs on a $34 billion list of goods issued last month. And of course, we all know it's soybeans, pork, electric vehicles. That has been talked about for a long time. And Beijing has called it the biggest trade war in economic history. It's unlikely to stop there. In fact, there will be probably escalation upon escalation. And that was a warning by Australia's former ambassador to China, Jeff Rabbi. China last month was already calling the tariff threats between Beijing and Washington a trade war. However, many observers are saying that the United States has walked away from any potential deal for now.
And Melody, another $16 billion of U.S. tariffs are expected to go into effect in 2 weeks. President Trump told reporters he would also consider imposing $500 billion in additional tariffs should Beijing retaliate against the already scheduled actions. We'll probably see escalation upon escalation. China has made it absolutely clear, Ravi said. It can't show weakness in the face of the United States, so I think this comes to some sort of end once there's been a lot of damage done and people start to come to their senses. Now, the direct impact of trade tensions on China's economic growth this year is expected to be limited right now between 1/10 and 3/10 of a percentage point. On the other hand, the U.S. economy is expected to take a bigger hit, according to analysts who warned that U.S. levies could affect American firms with investments in China. Melody.
Well, they're finally saying that it is a trade war. I even heard President Trump mention a trade war. They tried to avoid using the word war, but you're now beginning to, I guess that we're officially at war. And it was interesting. I was watching a video, and all these the prices that consumers will pay will eventually rise, which means that's actually more taxes that we also pay. So the government also gets higher taxes from the citizens by having higher prices that we pay. I thought, well, that's one way that you don't hear too many people talk about the impact. So not only do we pay higher prices for the product, but we also will pay higher taxes on that product. The employment part of the economy continued to power forward in June, and I'm talking about the jobs report. We've added another 213,000 jobs through the unemployment rate that rose to 4%. This was the report that was issued this morning. Economists surveyed by Reuters had expected a non-farm payroll gain of 195 and the jobless rate to hold steady at 3.8. And despite increasing talk about the economy being near full employment, hiring continues to grow. Along with June's upside surprise, the Bureau of Labor Statistics revised April's count up from 159,000 to 175,000, and May's from 223,000 to 244, a total of 37,000 more than initially stated, Dave.
Yeah, the increase in the unemployment rate, Melody, came due to a rise in the labor force participation rate, which increased 0.2% to 62.9% as over 600,000 people came off the sidelines and re-entered the labor force. Now, a more encompassing measure of unemployment that includes discouraged workers and those at part-time jobs for economic reasons also rose 0.2% to 7.8%. Professional and business services led the way with new jobs with 50,000, while manufacturing added 36, and healthcare 25, construction 13. On the other end, retail lost 22,000. The employment to population ratio held steady at 60.4%, tied for the highest level since January 29.
This report comes amid hopes that the economy is beginning to shift into higher gear. We saw the GDP rose just 2% in the first quarter, but it's widely projected to increase close to 4% for the second quarter. CNBC's rapid update tracker of economists' expectations is putting the expected gain at 3.8%. So the Fed is watching these numbers closely. It already has increased interest rates twice this year. In the last meeting they had, and in the notes released, it's indicated two more hikes before the end of 2018. But with the promise of more hikes for 2018, there's also some concern coming out of the Fed. And with the minutes that was released yesterday for the June Federal Open Market Committee, they're looking. The summary sort of indicated a belief that the labor outlook had continued to strengthen, but there's the concern that businesses are having a hard time filling jobs. So while some of the Fed's contacts indicated that they are raising pay, the overall feeling was that the wage pressures remain subdued. And of course, this was confirmed by today's report. One factor holding back wage increases was that the job growth tilted away from full-time positions, which actually declined by 89,000. That's huge, according to the BLS household survey data.
Yeah, and today's report comes a day after ADP and Moody's Analytics reported yesterday that private payrolls grew at a disappointing rate last month as businesses struggled to find new hires. Chief economist at Moody's Analytics, Mark Zandi, said businesses' number one problem is finding qualified workers. At the current pace of job growth, he said, if sustained, this problem is set to get much worse. These labor shortages will only intensify across all industries and all company sizes. Medium-sized businesses, which employ 50 to 499 people, added 80,000 payrolls in June. Large businesses added 69,000. Small, which employ 1 to 49 people, increased by 29,000. Now, those gains, as we've talked about, come amid concerns that a tight jobs market could put upward pressure on wages and generate an inflation spike that would force the Fed to raise interest rates further and faster than the market anticipates. Yet another solid month of job gains, Melody, provided little help to wages. In addition to the payroll gains, as we mentioned, average hourly earnings rose 2.7% year over year, a bit below expectations of a 2.8% increase.
You know, I talked about on the program about the difficulty of wages rising because our definition of jobs and the way people work today have changed so much with the outsourcing, with the gig economy and so forth. And so we're not sure these hourly wages are going to rise, these earnings are going to rise. But what really bothers me is the labor shortages. Now we have a lousy 2% GDP. I mean, in the average since they started, I can't recall for how long, but the historical average of the GDP is kind of like right where we are now, around 2.8%. But yet we've seen it. Look what it was when we were going through 2008. I don't feel this economy is the same as it was in 2008, 2006, and 2007. So it baffles me to why they're reporting all these job labor shortages. Are we uneducated? I mean, are we incapable? Or is that just a reflection of the full-time jobs to which everybody's part-time?
Good question.
So, I mean, it just doesn't add up. But the job cuts announced by U.S.-based employers rose 18% from 31,000 in May to 37 in June. And that was a report released yesterday by global outplacement and executive coaching firm Challenger Gray and Christmas. Last month's job cuts were up almost 20% from the 31,000 announced the same month last year. The CEO of Challenger, and of course his name is John Challenger, he said in a tight labor market, it's no surprise that employers are hanging on to their current workforces, as 4 months of this year have seen job cut totals under 40,000. However, in the wake of announced tariffs, we may be entering a period of increased cuts going forward. The second quarter of 2018 saw 25.3% fewer cuts than the previous quarter. And second quarter cuts are up 4% from that second quarter of last year. So, retailers continue to lead in job cuts with 73,000 announced so far this year, 16,000 of which were announced in the second quarter. And so far this year, Challenger has tracked nearly 2,600 announced store closures.
Yeah, and as we've been reporting, consumers continue to be confident in the current economy, which may translate to higher consumer spending, especially by the end of the year holidays. However, global trade fears and slow wage growth may end up hindering some of this optimism. Indeed, the administration's tariffs on steel have already begun to cost jobs. Challenger tracked 60 job cuts specifically due to steel tariffs last month. Mr. Challenger said this figure could increase in the third quarter as companies that import steel grapple with those increased costs. Meanwhile, consumer product manufacturers also impacted by a potential trade war have announced over 18,000 cuts so far this year. Now, that's a fourfold increase from the 4,600 cuts announced through the same period last year. Healthcare companies impacted by uncertainty surrounding the future of the Affordable Care Act, they announced the second highest number of job cuts this year, while companies in the service sector have announced a little less than that, 22,600. Melody?
You know, we're going to go back a little bit to the tariffs once again about how business leaders are beginning to have a little bit of concern with the about the Federal Reserve, about potentially damaging effects of tariffs as the trade dispute heats up. No one is disputing that tariffs would directly affect sheer trading volume between the U.S. and other countries like China and Mexico, but company executives and Fed officials, they're a little more concerned about possible indirect effects, specifically how souring relations could ultimately change how businesses invest. And according to the Fed's minutes from its June meeting, business contacts expressed concern about the possible adverse effects of tariffs, both domestically and abroad, on future investment activity. They also indicated capital spending had been scaled back or postponed as a result of uncertainty over trade policy, which is kind of interesting, Dave, because it's like, here you have concerns about capital spending being scaled back because of the tariffs, but yet all we heard about was the additional capital spending that was created by the tax cuts. So they're just going to equal each other out?
Well, yeah, time will tell. How about it? You know, I mean, it's the problem, not so much that the current tariffs will undermine, you know, global GDP in a big way, but that business leaders might just decide to forego capital spending and other investments, giving the newer uncertainty surrounding global trade. Such a widespread, you know, shift in confidence, you know, could be significant. I mean, it could hamstring, you know, a lot of the positive impact that was expected to be derived from last year's tax cuts and additional federal spending.
We're at break time. That just sneaks up on us every day. Back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen, and thank you for joining us.
We will find you acting on your best.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for the weekly newsletter. And the archives, we have a little bit of a problem with our archive page, but that's fixed. And so you can go there and listen to the long-term archives at the website, dgscoins.com. So moving right along, the Fed's minute revealed recession discussion, that they talked about it. They discussed whether the recession lurked around the corner and expressed concerns that global trade tensions could hit in an economy that by most measures looks strong. And this was also on the Fed's June meeting, what they talked about, the minutes. The minutes also suggested that policymakers might soon signal that the Fed's rate hiking cycle was advanced enough that policy was no longer boosting or constraining the economy. So the Fed's wide-ranging discussion on whether the recently narrowing spread between short and long-term interest rates might be a sign of an impending recession is significant. And let's see, what else did they have to say? A number of participants thought it would be important to continue to monitor the slope of the yield curve.
That's true.
They're so intelligent, aren't they?
They're so in tune.
They are.
The minutes did not indicate whether the Fed members took, either the yield curve or the information from, the staff presentation as pointing toward an impending recession. Melody and I, Reverend Butch Paul, we're keeping a close eye on the flattening yield curve, which has been closing, gradually but continually since January. As we've reported several times over the past 35 years, a recession has always followed an inverted yield curve when, longer-term rates get lower than shorter term, roughly 9 months on average after the inversion starts, a recession follows. Gold and silver prices soared after the last recession 10 years ago, Melody, and they're certainly surely to skyrocket again after the coming one too. Listeners, don't wait for prices to skyrocket. Call us, Discount Gold and Silver, now at 1-800-375-4188. Our team standing by to help. That's 1-800-375-4188. Melody.
Well, every week we try to. This was your little segment that you created, Brevity is Golden, and we talk about a lot of different things. And this one is particularly interesting because we all know how smart TVs are. And we all know that our privacy is being taken away. Everybody knows we have eyes and there's audio. And I always cover up the little eyes on my computers and stuff like that. I don't want anybody looking at me while I'm doing the show. So I cover everything up. But these TVs are just getting smarter and smarter, are they not?
Well, Melody, call them smart TVs. Call them devious TVs. Maybe even call them Superman TVs with X-ray vision. Whatever you do, these TVs in millions of U.S. homes track more than what's on the tube tonight. The New York Times reports that data companies have harnessed new technology to immediately identify what people are watching on their internet-connected TVs. They then use that information to send targeted advertisements to other devices in their homes. Samba TV, for example, S-A-M-B-A, has struck deals with, you know, roughly a dozen TV brands, including Sony, Sharp, TCL, and Philips, to place its software on certain sets. When people set up their TV, a screen urges them to enable a service called Samba Interactive TV. Friendly, don't you think? That's saying it recommends shows and provides special offers by cleverly recognizing on-screen content. But beware, the screen, which contains the Enable button, doesn't detail how much information Samba TV collects to make those recommendations. Samba TV said at the end of 2016 that more than 90% of people opted in, probably unwittingly. You know, once enabled, Samba TV can track almost everything that appears on a TV on a second-by-second basis. It essentially reads pixels to identify network shows and ads, as well as programs on Netflix and HBO, and even video games played on the TV. You know, why should we care? Well, you know, Samba TV has offered advertisers the ability to base their targeting on whether people watch so-called conservative or liberal media outlets and which party's presidential debates they watched. Melanie, all I can say is we live an interesting time. Once again, as a great prophet once said, that which we sow, so shall we reap. And that is this week's Brevity is Golden.
You know what's really interesting about this is the number that 90% of people opted into this program. And, you know, it's their lack of understanding, of wanting to understand. They're unable to understand. They're whatever it is. Because if they really understood what was happening once they signed on, once they hit that enable button, they probably wouldn't do it. So maybe that 90% would only be 20% or 10%. Yeah, really. And that 10% and 20% isn't enough to allow them to continue to create these programs. And Samba wouldn't be able to function if only 10% of people signed up. So in reality, they make it like it's attractive, like it's neat, that, you know, they're going to get, you know, it's fun, it's exciting, and they have no idea what they're truly giving away. And of course, you know, at 90% of people opting in, that'll keep Samba TV in business for a very long time.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, it's just because the lack of knowledge.
Yeah, you have to wonder, what are people thinking? I mean, it leads you to believe
they're not.
Yeah, that our underlying assumptions as consumers, I mean, I guess there are different hats that come into play here, but there's obviously got to be some underlying assumption of trust that, okay, well, the enable button, yeah, this sounds cool. On the other hand, you know, I guess you can argue that, you know, this is almost sheer deception by companies like, you know, Samba TV, you know, who can capitalize on, you know, whether it's trust, whether it's just, you know, individuals as we are, you know, wanting to set up our TVs, get the things done, hit accept, and watch whatever we're going to watch.
No one should be in our homes unless we invite them in. But they've created a way that they can be in our homes, and people just for not caring just sign up for it, and so it's only going to get worse. They're going to monitor us more. They're going to see more, hear more. And I'm not sure if I shared this story on air or not. I was with my cousin from up north, and another person was in the vehicle, and my cousin's mother, which is my aunt, has cancer, and she was going through chemo treatments, and she lost her hair, and she went and got a wig. Would you believe, was it the next day, shortly thereafter, on my emails I receive an email that says wigs. I've never talked about
anybody
else. I mean, how often do you talk about wigs? And I was shocked. And now periodically, about once a week, I get something from the same people that says wigs.
I'm waiting for the day, Melody, when we're at the shopping mall, we're in a big department store, we're buying, let's just say, underwear or t-shirts, and as we're getting ready to, you know, head to the checkout line, we're going to hear Siri come over the phone saying, "Stop. What you're about to buy is cheaper at Kohl's. Don't buy it here." It's like, what? Ah! It sounds off the wall, but geez, can that be far behind?
Well, I don't know if it's that. It's already happening on your cell phones and so forth. You plug in to, I think they price shop. I mean, you can with, you know, Expedia and, you know, for your travel and things like that and other products. And, you know, you can go to even Lowe's and they'll show you products that they don't even offer, but they'll give you a comparison on it. So to some degree, it's that is already there. But the scary thing is, and I do believe we'll be heading in this too, and the scary thing is the younger generation, they're so open to it. They're so, you know, they're so accepting of it without questioning what it is doing and their future. And it's just like chip and implants. It's like where mm-hmm. you'll be just walking out the store and, you know, your billing and everything else will it'll all be taken care of from the government check that you get. And, you know, the world is happy and a better place to live, but it isn't. And it'll be a sad awakening someday in their lives. But let's go ahead and move on. We have President Trump. He blasted NATO during a rally last night in Montana. He said that Europeans' worst nightmare come to life when Western diplomatic sources revealed this morning. Trump portrayed the alliance as one-sided, transactional, and bad for the United States, and seemed to suggest that the U.S. military support is conditional on the Germans paying more, calling out Angela, the German chancellor. The president's view on NATO and trade are inseparable. He believes that, as he said in Montana, Americans are schmucks paying for the whole thing. Europeans kill us on trade. They kill us on other things. They kill us on NATO. They kill us. He says the president says he sees both NATO and trade as examples of international systems set up to mess with the U.S. And now he's going around the world with his talking points, and he's collecting them. He's collecting what he sees are Americans' dues.
Maybe he's the modern day Alexis de Tocqueville, Melody. But when the history of this presidency is written, you know, one of the most important chapters will be the way he changed America's relationship with Europe, or as it seems to be changing. He certainly doesn't do what normal presidents have done.
Which
could be a good thing. And make unequivocal statements about solidarity against shared threats. He does ask them to pay up, which in theory isn't necessarily a bad thing, if only it were part of a broader message of support. Rhetorically, however, he seldom distinguishes between allies and adversaries. And when he does, he often saves the toughest word for our friends. You know, the theory of, you know, the case is that Europe needs us more than we need them. And certainly for now, at least, Europeans have nowhere else to turn for their protection except inward, although that I think that's unlikely, you know, to be able to be sustainable. It's possible his theory works out in the long term and they become militarily much more self-sufficient. But what's not clear is what it's going to mean for the U.S. in the long run to draw down so much goodwill with our traditional allies, you know, especially if they don't think we have their best interests at heart. European officials have been telling us they're worried that the president will take a purely transactional approach to NATO, and that he'll ignore shared values and other dimensions of the NATO alliance. Melody.
Well, you know, it is time for these countries to start stepping up to the pump. And and they're not in great condition. We're not in great condition economically. But, we can't continue to defending the world, I think. But we live in a different time than we did 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 70 years ago. So how do you update, and things do need to be updated. They have to be changed. Times have changed. The only thing that shouldn't be changed is our Constitution. But Trump is correct that the other NATO members aren't living up to their financial commitments. But they have been improving over the past couple of years. And Trump's been in office for the past couple of years, so he's making an impact there. But what comes next? The other NATO member states worry, and then the rally seems to confirm their fears that Trump will come into next week's NATO summit in Brussels like a wrecking ball and beat up on them over not paying their bills. The path they would prefer, a victory lap for the progress made since he became president. You have the Germans, they're a little more concerned, but it's just not them. There are a lot of other countries who live in real fear of Russia now that Putin is rooting for a transatlantic tensions and divisions. Europeans, worst fear of all, is so bad it's almost unthinkable, would be for Trump to say that the summit, that U.S. protection is somehow conditional on them, meeting defense spending targets. Trump's aides assure the allies he will provide an ironclad commitment to continue defending them, and certainly he's done over the past year. Nevertheless, the European officials are still nervous because they don't trust that Trump's advisors actually speak for Trump. Trust is the key word here, Dave, trust. I don't think he's going to go in there with an iron fist and saying, it's all over and so forth. I don't think he's going to do that.
Well, I don't either.
I don't think he's going to do it. I think one thing I could say is when he's G7 meeting was different, but I think in some of these other larger meetings and groups and so forth, he goes in and he listens. I mean, he kind of observes, before he says anything, so I think he'll take that same approach. He'll observe. That's what I think.
All right. Well,
so we'll see.
yes, we will. Now, what do we have? About a minute to the next break?
No. We have just no seconds at all. Right there is a break. And we'll be back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. We'll be right back after these few short messages.
Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And again, I was still doing some playing with the numbers on $20 gold pieces. They're just great buys. I can't offer them to you at American Gold Eagle prices like I could. A couple of months ago, we were, you know, sharing those $20 gold pieces, the prices the same as Gold Eagle. The premium spreads increased, and this is what happens. When you get a little more demand coming in, the prices are going to rise because there's limited inventory. And so the spreads have widened, and I can't adjust my numbers, and that's how I was able to do it. I was able to lower my prices to you along with my wholesale prices to get you that, to give you that special deal. But the point is, there's still a great buy because the premiums are still 20-year lows. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. There's all kinds of things. This is kind of interesting. We have a typhoon that is threatening China. I believe we have also Hurricane Beryl that is collecting down in the Caribbean. They're not sure it's going to, you know, strengthen to anything that anyone needs to be concerned about. But usually when you think you don't need to be concerned, you know, they can hit you and strengthen very rapidly. And that's what we saw with, wasn't it Harvey? Was it Harvey that was just barely a tropical storm, and the next thing you know, it hit Houston and
whammo bammo.
They had a 200-year flood. But you know, if economic and geopolitical turmoil in Asia isn't enough, there's a superstorm in the South Pacific that's developing. Super Typhoon Maria. It rapidly intensified last night and is becoming the equivalent of a Category 5 hurricane northwest of Guam. In doing so, it set a rare milestone. Maria, which had maximum sustained winds of 155 miles per hour this morning, is forecast to move northwest during the next few days, before making a slight westward turn. So you have these all these computer models are zeroing in on landfall in the heavily populated areas of coastal China near Shanghai. So while the storm is likely to be somewhat weaker by the time it makes landfall, it could still strike a wallop as a super typhoon or a strong typhoon. And of course, you could have widespread flooding, you could have deadly coastal storm surge, you have the damage from the winds, but the meteorologists are already sounding the alarm for mainland China.
And no need, Melody, to remind listeners that Hurricane Maria, which devastated Puerto Rico last year, was at one point a Category 5 storm. You know, there will never again be another Hurricane Maria in the Atlantic Ocean, since that name was retired by the, you know, the Storm Naming Committee that's overseen by the World Meteorological Organization, WMO. However, there's a separate storm name list for Pacific typhoons. So now we have another powerful Maria. This sets a record for the first back-to-back storms with the same name to each reach Category 5 intensity, but in different oceans.
Wow, interesting. Every time I hear Maria, I want to start singing.
Maria, I know.
Maria, Maria, Maria.
I've got the ukulele.
Pompeo, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, he's back in North Korea and reportedly he's met with Kim Jong-il. He's the vice chairman of North Korea's Workers' Party to fill in details of denuclearization.
What?
Yeah! Go say!
<What's that? laughs>
You want us to do what? So If everyone remembers, we have Kim Jong-un broadly declared North Korea would commit to denuclearize at the summit that he had with President Trump just last month. And Secretary of State Pompeo hopes to get more information on a concrete form moving forward. I don't know what's going to happen if he doesn't, but he's also hoping to discuss recovering the remains of American soldiers from the Korean War that was promised by Kim Jong-un that he would send them back to the United States. I thought some did come back. I thought there was 8 or something that came back. Or
I thought I remembered reading that too. But I'm hazy on the details of whether
hundreds,
you know, they had been sent back or whether they, you know, had been prepared for shipment back here. Several critics, Melody, do remain skeptical about the North's commitment to dismantling their nuclear program, and that includes Trump's national security advisor, John Bolton. This is Pompeo's third meeting now in North Korea, and still not much has been revealed, the details anyway. If meetings continue to be unfruitful, the administration might return to its previous, more aggressive approach. On a fun note, Pompeo reportedly gave Kim Jong-un an Elton John CD with his signature song, Rocket Man, ahead of his meetings today. Now, that's some good-natured gifting, if we must say so. No word yet on Kim's reaction and whether he'd be saying hello or goodbye to the Yellow Brick Road, which happens to be another song in that same album.
Yes. we'll never get the real details on that one unless there.
Indeed. Unless there's a photo op with translators.
And I can't imagine what he could send President Trump that would relate to Dotard. Rocket Man, you know, there was something he could send, but Dotard, I don't know. But
I don't know.
You know, but anyway, so if he responded in kind, you know, as some levity and so forth. But often we talk about supply and demand. I talk about it with $20 gold pieces. And here's another analyst who talks about the importance of paying attention to the basic economics of the gold market. And so we wanted to share this with you to hear somebody that's saying the same thing that we say day in and day out. And it's the Lombardi Letter. And again, it's a reminder of just how supply and demand plays into pricing. And it's just economics 101. When supply declines and demand remains strong, prices move higher. In the gold market these days, we see supply declining and demand remaining strong. With this, a massive move to the upside in the price of gold could be possible ahead. You look at the gold miners, they are having a very difficult time producing gold at the current prices. We see it in the data very clearly. For example, if you look at gold mine production in the United States, in the first 4 months of 2018, the United States mines produced 69,000 kilograms of gold. In the first 4 months of 2017, the gold mine production was almost 77 kilograms. So if you do the simple math, this represents a decline of close to 10% in gold production in the United States. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, the United States is the fourth biggest gold producer in the world.
True as can be, but also don't get stuck on U.S. gold production alone. Look at the supply of gold globally. And don't just look at mine production, look at other sources like, you know, the recycling of the precious metal as well. In 2017, according to the World Gold Council, the total global gold supply declined by 4%. Could the supply side improve? Well, remember, gold prices are the key for supply. If precious metal prices remain suppressed as they are right now, recycling of the precious metal may not be as profitable. As for mine production, it could face a lot of scrutiny ahead if it could, you know, it could decline a lot. A lot more than it has, although, you know, we see it going in the other direction. I mean, between 2012 and 2015, as gold prices were tumbling, gold producers reached for the low-hanging fruit. You know, those are the grounds with, you know, the most gold in them. They really had no other option. Their survivability could have become questionable otherwise. At the same time, gold miners pulled back severely on exploration of the precious metal. Keep in mind, exploration is essentially an investment in future production. You know, in mining, resources deplete. If miners aren't constantly looking for more gold, they can't remain in the business for the long run. The gold grades in the ground are not that great right now. It costs more to produce gold from low-grade grounds. Therefore, exploration has taken a massive hit. So we haven't seen many new discoveries recently.
And then we take a look at the demand side. Demand remains strong. You have the big buyers like India and China. They continue to be active in the market. We've heard reports about Russia in there buying bigger and bigger amounts of gold. We see the central banks buying quietly and constantly. Additionally, there's been a surge in demand from Europe. So in this situation, the supply side facing problems and demand remaining strong remains persistent. So don't be shocked to see gold prices surge. And how high can gold go? Daily fluctuations aside, because they're a result of a lot of less relevant noise. Lombardi, he wrote in the short term, if gold's price breaks back through the 1350 to 1375 level, the metal's going to soar. In the long term, they say the 2000 an ounce gold price isn't unreasonable. We believe more than that, especially how the next recession arrives, that the price is going to skyrocket far above that level. And I think after 2008, people say the next recession we go into is not going to be like the Great Recession of 2008. And I beg to differ. It's going to make that seem like a cakewalk. I mean, the only difference between now and then was really the subprime was the housing market.
Yeah.
And we're getting into the same situation. So I think things are far worse today than they were. People had full-time jobs then. People weren't paying, you know, $20,000+ for a family of four for health insurance. Things are much more expensive today, and they have less money. They have less savings today than they did then. So, yeah, things are just not as good. And I think the recession that we had in now will be far worse because it's just not going to happen here. It's going to be a world recession depression. Dave?
Interesting thoughts, Melody. You want to tell us... we're reading about U.S. fertility rates falling fastest, in fact, where home prices happen to be higher.
Wasn't that interesting?
Yeah.
You know, we saw the U.S. Counties that saw some of the steepest increases in home value. As you said, they're seeing some of the steepest declines in fertility rates. Now, this is according to a recent study by Zillow. Everybody knows who Zillow is. They have all the homes on the internet that you can go up if you're looking to buying or selling your home. The housing trends don't necessarily mean that increased home values are a cause for the decline in fertility rates or vice versa. It could be that people with careers who can afford expensive homes but can't afford or choose not to have children before 30 cluster in certain counties. Cultural factors are mattering more than they used to also. This is from Eric Kaufman, a professor at the University of London. He says a lot of economic rationale for having kids has fallen away. It becomes much more of a choice. On average, if a county's home value increase was 10 percentage points higher than another county's, its fertility rate fell 1.5 percent points further. What does this all mean? Housing expenses is the largest and fastest growing cost for child rearing, according to a 2015 report by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. That could potentially impact families who need more space or want to buy a home before having a baby.
Yeah, I mean, this comes as the average age for a first-time home buyer, Melody, has increased from 32.5 what's that, 5 years ago, to 35.2 in 2017. And women, as we know, are generally waiting longer to have kids. Fertility rates have been declining consistently in the U.S. for years, and most notably during the financial crisis 10 years ago. And while home values have recovered since then, the fertility rate, interestingly, has not. In fact, birth rates are still falling among women even in their early 30s. That's according to the Global Aging Institute. Why is this happening? Well, before the Great Recession, America had higher fertility rates, in part due to the relative ease with which young people could start careers and establish independent households compared with young people in other wealthy countries. And that advantage has largely evaporated. Millennials are more risk averse today than earlier generations were at the same age. People 50 or even 25 years ago didn't wait to be financially well off or well established before starting a family. Now it's considered in many corners to be irresponsible not to. So that's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, it is.
That has big consequences, I think, for the country in the future.
Absolutely. Look at Japan. Look at their aging population and look at what they're going through. And, you know, something that's interesting, we talk about company buybacks all the time, and it's a way that their stocks are being pumped up. And we're getting ready to end the program, so we'll talk about this on Monday, about tech company stock buybacks exceed $1 trillion. And you want to know why the stock markets, why the NASDAQ is trading where it's at. And we'll talk about that come Monday. Dave, we're out of time.
It can't be.
It is. And I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us and spending this hour with us. And so this weekend, I want you to be safe. We'll be back Monday. And until then, have a great weekend. Good night and God bless.
Bye-bye.
If I got me a wealthy man.